Case number 22-1288 et al. Cadillac of Naperville, Inc. Petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. McHarg for the petitioner, Ms. Campbell for the respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Patrick McHarg, Sr. on behalf of Appellant Cadillac of Naperville. I think, as Your Honors are well aware, this case has what could best be described as a Byzantine procedural posture, having been here once before, remanded, reversed by the board, brought back, and then in the middle of my appeal, changed by the board yet again. Nonetheless, here we are. But really, to me, this case comes down to...
You haven't argued for another remand.
We are not
arguing. You don't want to do more.
I think, to be honest, Your Honor, we think we can win either way, but B, I don't want to mislead this court. I think my client has some litigation exhaustion, so we'll just make our argument and understand where we are. Under any standard, you know, I know Lionel Astemirs is before the Fifth Circuit, so we're on, you know, perhaps even the board standard remains unclear, but... we're still just dealing with common sense in the workplace. What kind of behavior can an employee get away with and be left without punishment? The you know, under the Atlantic standard, you have this question of where's the place? Well, the law is inconsistent on that. On the one hand, they say, inside the office, it's heads we win, tails you lose. In an office, we win. Outside an office, we win. Then the question comes up of the subject matter. And then to us, we take most seriously the subject matter of, you know, the nature of this outburst. What happened here was extreme and directed at the owner of the company in his very own office. The board has never, either time, the board failed to take into consideration exactly what happened in that office.
And just to be clear, when you say under either standard, there's no different arguments you would make under Atlantic Steel than Rightline. You're making the same points here under both, that you should win under either standard.
That's correct,
Your Honor. Nothing else that you would argue if officially we were applying Atlantic Steel.
No, Your Honor.
So under Rightline, right, there's two steps. Prima facie case that the action of discharge was out of animus, and second, whether the employer would have fired the employee anyway. It seems to me what you've been saying today fits mostly in the second bucket, that because of the severity of this statement, you would have fired him anyway. My question is, are you making an argument that there is no evidence of animus that the board could rely on for the prima facie, for step one under Rightline?
If we were analyzing the case under Rightline, I believe that we have demonstrated that there was no nexus, that the board relied upon a June 29th conversation for, I believe it was a September 17th discharge, a throwaway comment that...
I agree we can nitpick about some of the pieces of evidence. And in this footnote, the board cited six. The one that really stood out to me is just what happened on the morning of the firing, right? Bispicus comes in, and I hope you forgive me for paraphrasing, but Lascaris basically says, you've been the ringleader of this strike, and I don't want you to work here anymore. It seems pretty explicit statement that he is not a fan of Bispicus because he's participated in the strike.
Well, he was discussing that with the entirety of the union leadership, right? The business agent was there, the president of the union was there, Mr. Bispicus was there. Lascaris is trying to negotiate to remove all of the strikers at that time. So you're correct, Your Honor. He was telling them that he was trying to offer some sort of settlement to get them to go elsewhere to work. That is correct. And then Bispicus calls him a liar. Frank gets angry, and then the whole sideshow starts.
It's not.
I'm sorry.
It's a settlement. The concern from the board was that Mr. Lascaris was explicit that he doesn't want any union members working in his shop now. Any union members that went out on a strike, he doesn't want any of them there.
That's correct. The conversation was hostile.
Of animus towards their exercise of their rights under the NLRA to both join a union and engage in collective action like a strike?
I do not deny, Your Honor, that it is more case. Okay.
They're on animus.
Sorry?
On animus.
Well, that's correct.
Okay. So in response to Judge Garcia's question, you are just focused on we would have fired him anyhow.
We would have fired him anyhow. That's correct. It would be a difficult case for us to say that there was no prima facie case.
I'm just trying to make sure I understand the context completely here. It's not that the way that the board's analysis went, it's not the case that Hibiscus, I'm butchering his name, I'm sure, that his behavior couldn't be subject to any discipline, right? They weren't saying that under Right Line or Atlantic Steel, like, nothing could be done to him. The question was really whether the termination was appropriate, right?
That's correct.
And so how do you win when there was no evidence that the company had ever terminated anyone for saying anything similar and that the company never produced a code of conduct that would justify termination?
I understand your question, Your Honor. As we have stated, I believe in both of our briefs, there's certain conduct that you simply aren't going to be able to replicate. There are certain things that a standard of conduct is not necessarily, as we argue in our brief, going to say, don't commit a felony or wear pants to work. But if you violate certain common sense principles, you're going to lose your job, right? I had a situation once where a guy was cleaning his rifle at his workstation. We didn't necessarily have a don't clean your rifle at work and point it at your coworkers. But
did you have any code of conduct at all, though?
I believe there was a written code of conduct. I don't believe we submitted it into evidence. It was 7 years ago. I don't recall. I'm sorry. I believe we just dragged the code of conduct out through the testimony of Mr. Lascaris, and screaming a vile epithet, climbing around his desk. We thought at the time warranted summary termination.
Screaming or climbed around his desk, the ALJ found that he sort of muttered this on his way out the door. Are you challenging the ALJ's fact findings?
We can't do that, really. It's a practical matter. I don't think he found it as a mutterer. I think he found that it was
on the way out the door.
He said it. On the way out the door was the discussion between the business agent and the employee about whether or not they heard the discussion between Lascaris and Mr. Bisbigas.
Questions?
No, we'll wait for rebuttal, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greetings, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Campbell, and I represent the National Labor Relations Board. After a highly contentious strike, Cadillac of Naperville fired Mr. John Bisbigas, who represented the company's mechanics as their union steward, while he was attempting to negotiate return to work procedures. The evidence of the company's hostility towards Mr. Bisbigas' union activity is overwhelming. In the 6 intervening years, the board's conclusion has never wavered that the termination of Mr. Bisbigas violated Section 8A3 and 1 of the National Labor Relations Act. It is long past time to remedy that violation.
You would agree that that the company could have been justified in disciplining Mr. Biscus, right? Imposing some discipline, right?
Your Honor, I can't speak for the board on what it might have done had you know, the employer disciplined in a lesser manner.
I'm not asking you what they might have done, but that it would be that would be a reasonable action that could be sustainable under board law.
Under board law, an employer can discipline an employee for misconduct. Full stop. That's not really a question. An employer's not forbidden ever from disciplining an employee for misconduct, unless it's done, you know, with anti-union animus, or unless the employee was retained the protection of the act under the Atlantic Steel analysis at the time when they engaged in the discipline.
What I'm a little confused about is, so came here last time and you said you're supposed to apply right line. The board did Atlantic Steel, and then the board changed its mind and said we're going to do right line. And we remanded for right line. They applied right line. And now it comes here again, and now they're saying in line elastomers, actually, we're going back to Atlantic Steel. And line elastomers said not only are we going to apply Atlantic Steel, we're making this decision retroactive, which means line elastomers applies to this case. And so how can we? He doesn't want to treat him like a ping pong ball here, right? They don't want to keep going back and forth. But you all keep changing the rules of the game. And this is agency review, not district court review. And it seems hard for me to understand how we can uphold a decision under right line when the board has said that's not the correct law anymore.
I understand, Your Honor. I think in terms of the retroactivity analysis, board law is quite clear that when the board makes a decision that's retroactive, that absolutely applies to all cases pending before the agency.
It applied to cases pending in court?
The board has discretion to ask for a remand when a case is in court, when the agency issues a change in law. Here, the agency acted very reasonably. I think this court would agree, given the fact that this is a very unique set of circumstances. So in particular, you're right, Your Honor, the judge here originally applied right line. And right line itself remains good law. I would note it's correct. It would not necessarily be applied in cases like this moving forward, but a right line motive analysis is still a proper way to find a violation under Section 8A3(1). And so in that sense, that makes this case unique. And in addition, this case is also unique in the sense that the standard that the board has now adopted in line elastomers was a pre-existing standard. So Atlantic Steel has already been applied in the facts of this case in the 2019 decision and order before you. That's a very unusual stance when the board or any agency changes law. It's not very typical that the law that it changes to has already been applied to the facts before the court. So in this case, the agency did choose and exercised its discretion to stand behind the decision and order before you, analyzed under right line. And I think it's important to keep Mr. Bespikus in mind. I think the concerns about his failure to receive the remedy to which he is entitled under the act, another remand would not be in the interest of justice for him, for this court, for the board's resources.
We also need to keep the employer in mind too. They shouldn't be drugged through round after round after round after round. It's not, I understand your point about Mr. Bespikus, but it's also for the employer unfair when the board keeps changing the rules of the game.
Correct, Your Honor, which was another reason to stand behind the decision and order before this court, which is under right line. I'll note that the employer has, from the very beginning, in its very first brief, post-hearing brief to the ALJ, has asked for right line to apply to the facts of this case. It continues to not insist on a remand and right line is being applied.
We're supposed to apply on appeal the law in effect at the time of the appeal. That's where I understand the arguments in that case. But so you're asking us to apply the law that's not in effect at the time of appeal? Or are you asking us to decide this under Atlantic Steel based on the prior application of Atlantic Steel?
I believe
decide it's on the ground. It doesn't matter either way. Either they win or you win either way.
My answer to your question, Your Honor, is yes. I think you can do any of the above. Here, Rightline itself remains good law. Rightline is an unlawful motivation
situation.
Correct, Your Honor, but the board has had opportunities to apply both.
An answer you said earlier would mean it's the right test for this case, because you said when the board declares one of its decisions retroactive, that's only retroactive as to cases pending before the board. And this case was final and on appeal when this new decision came around, right?
Correct, Your Honor. I want to be very careful with my language here.
I appreciate you still would have discretion to ask us for a remand.
Correct.
But it does not apply of its own force in a court.
There is an understanding that when, for example, the record is filed with the court, the board doesn't have jurisdiction. So that would be an argument. I would not want to suggest that the board would not be able to seek a remand if it wanted to. However, in this case, the agency has chosen not to seek a remand, and for good reason, and stands behind the decision and order currently before this court. That being said, if this court is uncomfortable applying Rightline and General Motors, given that Lyon Elastomers is good law, I think the Wyman Gordon case law that is good law across the circuits and that the DC Circuit has relied on repeatedly, which is that if this court were to remand, it's a sort of similar to a harmless error argument. Sure, you could argue now the analysis that should be done in a case like this is Atlantic Steel. But if so, okay, so this court then remands again for the board to apply Atlantic Steel again. Really, it's clear from the record, and I don't think there's a reasonable doubt that the board, if it were to apply Atlantic Steel, would come to the same reasonable conclusion that the employer violated Section 8A3 and 1 here.
I appreciate your point about filing the record, but actually, the NLRB, the cases aren't filed because they're unenforceable until a court grants enforcement or not. And you have a cross application here for enforcement.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the board's view is that the cross application for enforcement should be decided under Rightline or Atlantic Steel?
Your Honor.
Both.
Yeah. Your Honor, the board stands behind its decision under Rightline and an unlawful motivation analysis. That being said, should this court feel that...
I'm asking the board's position on what basis it believes this court should... Because you've asked for enforcement, you've got a cross application for enforcement.
Yes, Your Honor.
It might win and we'll all be moot, but... You've asked for enforcement, and so what is your position on the legal rule that should be applied, given Lyon Elastomers, for the cross-application for enforcement?
Your Honor, the agency stands behind its unlawful motive analysis under Rightline as a finding of a Section 83 and 1 violation. The agency also believes that this court can look at the writing on the wall, look at the record in this case, and know that the agency would come to the same reasonable conclusion were it to apply the current standard, which is Lyon Elastomers, which would again be, which this court has repeatedly upheld cases decided under both standards. And so the agency does stand behind its decision and order before this court. I'm not, Chenery might forbid me from saying just go with Atlantic Steel. And we want to be conscious of that. We want to be aware of this, that, and therefore this the board does stand behind its unlawful motive analysis. However, I think the Wyman-Gordon and those other exceptions that I cited, the Wyman-Gordon exception that I cited about not turning, like Your Honor said, not turning an agency's decision into a ping pong game with the courts. There's no reason to remand this case and have it decided again under the board's current standard, given that the record is quite clear that the agency would come to the same reasonable conclusion. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll round up and give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just say, as to that last comment, I'm a little nervous about conceding that we can just assume that the board would do the same thing with this case. I mean, the fact is they never did. To your question, Your Honor, about is before this court, this case was remanded to the board and was before the board at the time Lion Elastomers was decided. So Lion Elastomers retroactive application, their cross enforcement is on the Lion Elastomers standard. But back to our original argument.
The board has applied both Atlantic Steel and Rightline to your case. You have, you're here challenging certainly their latest decision under Rightline, but they've applied, first time they applied Atlantic Steel and you said apply Rightline. You got what you asked for, and now they've applied Rightline. So I think all she was saying is the board has already applied both. So, and you said your arguments as to error, which are before us, are the same under both tests. So,
and I stand by that. As this court held in Felix Industries and then later in AdTrans, there is a way to get to decency in the workplace. AdTrans court, the union took the positions perfectly acceptable to use the most offensive and derogatory racial or sexual epithets, so long as that's connected to union organizing, and it's unfair to expect members to comport themselves with civility and decorum. And the court went on and said, working people are capable of discussing matters intelligently and in generally acceptable language. That overarching principle applies here. This is a case about workplace decency, about not tolerating insulting attacks and attack. Had that been
at least by mechanics, but Mr. Lasarkis had some pretty ripe language himself before he spoke. So it's a little hard to say that foul language is not tolerated in the workplace, unless it's the point that it's only tolerated by Mr. Lasarkis?
Not at all, Your Honor. But if I stub my toe and yell something, that's one thing.
It was directed to Mr. Bespikus, because it was, you get the F out of here or I'm going to F you out of here.
That was after Mr. Bespikus called him a liar. I don't recall if he swore or not. And yeah, there was argument in his office. That's
how they disagreed on recollections. But that wasn't, Mr. Bespikus had not used any foul language at that point.
Okay, but.
And I'm just trying to ask this because you've talked about, and it's a relevant concern about the ability, at least when it comes to sexually and racially derogatory language, of employers to ensure that they have a workplace atmosphere that is free of such hostility. But I thought this is a case of just sort of ordinary profanity. I'm trying to understand what your description of the workplace is, because it certainly doesn't seem to be one where profanity is not used.
Not saying it in a shop would be, there's a difference between profanity directing the profanity at somebody.
Mr. Lasarkis did too.
He told him to get out of the office. I'm not going to repeat it.
Bleep, bleep, bleep.
Right. No, I mean, he did swear, but he didn't insult Mr. Bespikus directly. He didn't say something that would have threatened him or demeaned him. And the board has held since the 80s, insulting attacks need not be tolerated. Thank you to this panel. We ask for a reversal and happy holidays.
Thank you.